Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. Did you know you could get CDs from us and listen to a year's worth of Real Science Friday shows on one CD? It is so much fun. In fact, I'm holding in my hand the Real Science Friday 2011 CD. You can get the MP3 CD, play it in an MP3 player, or even play it in a DVD player or your computer. So you can get it for 2011, 2010, all the way back to 2006. If you'd like, hundreds of Real Science Friday shows convenient on a single MP3 CD, and it'll support the airing of Real Science Friday. So just call us at 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278, or go online, realsciencefriday.com, and click on the store. And of course, that'll help us continue to broadcast. May God bless you. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, we're going to go through the latest edition of Answers Magazine from Ken
wait,
Ham.
Can I interrupt you, Bob? I want to talk about something out of the Atlantic Magazine first. I got it right in front of me here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love this headline.
I was given a copy of this.
Okay, this is awesome.
Go ahead.
Here's the headline. This is from the Atlantic. They're quoting out of Cell Magazine.
Cell, like jail cell?
Not jail cell.
Phone cell? Cell phone?
No, not phone cell.
Living cells.
Living cells.
Like cellular
those real
biology.
Those simple black boxes that don't do much, right?
Right, a cell. A simple little cell.
A simple little cell.
All right.
Well, the headline is, to model the simplest microbe in the world, you need 128 computers.
Okay. Now,
so
come
this
on.
Thing, I mean, it's only got like, what, 500 genes. It's a very small.
It's a single-celled organism. This is a bacteria, Fred, and it's tiny. It's way smaller than E. coli. This is a tiny little bacteria.
A tiny, tiny little bacteria. These guys were trying to simulate the cell. They wanted to pick a simple one, and they needed 128 computers to do the job.
To simulate. So they say simple, but that's an illusion, because when you have something that can reproduce itself, something biologically alive that can reproduce itself, there's no conceivable way for it to be simple.
Oh, yeah. If you look at a cell under a microscope, as you get closer into the cell, it gets more complicated. Things seem to get more sophisticated.
Yeah.
Is that the same case when you look at like a microchip?
No, something that men make.
Yeah. It gets simpler.
The closer as you zoom in, it gets simpler.
Simpler and the boxes get bigger.
Right.
And,
with
and
God's
whatnot.
Even physics, it gets wildly.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's just so awesome. The further in we peer at what God made, the more we are amazed at his brilliance.
And yet this all happened by chance and mistakes.
All right.
DNA.
Well, that was good. So you preempted our first
Answers
Magazine.
I did. I thought that was too good
but
to pass up.
That is good. So to model the simplest microbe in the world, you need 128 computers. That's what they call simple life. Welcome to Real Science Friday.
That's right. Hey, Bob, I wanted to take this opportunity. I think it's our first show since the Aurora tragedy where we're not actually interviewing another scientist.
That's right.
And I know that Will Duffy sat in to do that show, and I just wanted to thank him. I thought you guys did a great job.
Oh.
Many of your points, and they're listed on the website. I'd encourage people to go there.
It's a very special episode of Real Science Friday because we don't normally talk about current events and criminal justice. But we did because so many of the other talk shows were lamenting and hand-wringing, saying there's really nothing you could do in a free society. You have to expect this. That, I think, is not true.
It's not true. And you had a list of what the problems are and what the solutions are. And I read that to our adult Bible class on Sunday, back when this happened. And obviously, there's a little bit of controversy in there. I mentioned that I happen to agree with it completely, and hopefully that has a positive impact. I know that there was at least one person in the Bible study that had brought up about putting their kid into a Christian school.
Instead of a
public school.
Well, that's very encouraging, right?
Yeah.
And Fred, if you accept the mainstream worldview of moral relativism and the grand paradigm that everything came from nothing, undirected, and all that, then you really don't have too many substantive things to say. And if you're a talk show host, you got to say something. So they say things like, well, in a free society, it's like, stop right there. Yeah. You're wrong. Because what? In tyrannies and under dictators, you don't have murders and mass murders? Of course you do, right? A lot of people would say Palestinians don't live in a free society. And there's all kinds of mass murders going on as a result of their situation. And how about Caesar in the Roman Empire? He gets murdered. So to say that, well, in a free society, that is a complete dodge of the real issues. And the real issue is not, can you prevent every crime? It's, can you end an epidemic? And the answer to that is yes, especially when you look at biblical principles.
Yeah, and I like some of your points about like the mental disease thing that they're going to try to put on this. Well, he wasn't shooting at cops because he knows they'll shoot back.
Exactly.
You know, there's the whole thing about guns. A thought that came in my mind, would he have done this in the Old West, in a theater in the Old West where everybody has a gun?
Right, exactly. In Colorado 100 years ago, he might have been shot before he got the second round off.
Yeah.
And there, of course, is mental illness, Fred. But even with mentally ill people or people who are severely mentally handicapped, they can be taught the consequences of actions. And so when our society makes excuses for people who commit horrendous crime, then you end up getting more horrendous crime.
Sigmund Freud, he wanted to eliminate the Bible as a way to counsel people, replace it with man.
Yeah.
That reminds me, after this happened, I looked up on the internet, reading all the different news outlets, including MSNBC, because, you know, here's the liberal slant. Their second article on their page was, Darwin is not to blame. That was an interesting article.
Wow.
And they quoted atheist scientists of why he's not to blame. I couldn't believe it. They're quoting from the scientists who support and help develop that worldview.
I like the fact that they're feeling the pressure and the need to be defensive.
Yes, I did too, actually, that it was the second item.
Wow, because when you teach young people that they're animals, you should not be surprised when they act like animals.
That's right.
Fred, you mentioned Freud and Jung and all these theories within psychology, and I think that one error that they tend to make is when they say it's nothing but. Like, it's nothing but your environment, or it's nothing but your genetics, or it's nothing but. So I think it's the nothing buttery part of psychology, which has left them out in so often misunderstanding what's going on. Human beings have to be taken as a whole creature, and that includes body, soul, and spirit. And there is the mind, which is not part of your physical makeup. It could be affected by your physical makeup, but there are leading neurobiologists who are publishing saying your mind is different than your brain. Your brain is not your mind. Your mind is not your brain. And so all those nothing buttery and all the efforts to look at man as though he's only a material entity, those all lead down the path of error.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I thought it was an excellent show. Again, thanks to Will Duffy for sitting
in. Yeah, thank you,
and
Will.
And RealScienceFriday.com is where you can go and listen to all of our episodes.
That's right.
And that one's archived as well, and just real good listening.
Thanks so much, Fred. Okay, so Answers Magazine.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I am so excited about what they're doing at the Creation Museum. For their fifth anniversary weekend, Fred, they introduced a new exhibit. And that museum is state-of-the-art.
Yeah, you've been there, right?
I've been there a few times.
I haven't made it yet. I can't wait.
It is one of the exhibit designers for, I think it was Universal Studios in Los Angeles, was the designer of the museum.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They had folks who were leaders in their fields, whether it is art or technology, architecture, and they came through with building the greatest museum, the Creation Museum. For their fifth anniversary, they introduced a brand new Lucy exhibit. You know, Lucy is that famous alleged ancestor to mankind.
Yeah, it's the one that everybody's heard of.
We evolved from a 3-foot-tall chimp-like creature, supposedly. But what they do is they use hologram technology, Fred, and they show the Lucy skeleton, and then they show the artistic license. Because you have the bones, Well, then how are you going to apply the skin on those bones and the hair and the coloring? And it turns out those going to the museum could see it with their own eyes. You take the exact same bones and the same skull bones, and you draw completely different creatures.
You can get whatever your imagination almost wants to
come up with. For the most part, she could look like a chimp, look like a gorilla, look like maybe an early caveman. And so the license that they take is so significant, and it's really good for the general public to realize when they're looking at an exhibit, this might be the imagination of the artist.
Yeah. So Dr. David Minton was the scientist that oversaw this exhibit.
He's an anatomist.
Right? Yeah, he's an anatomist. And he said this. He said, an imagination-rich artist can have a very powerful influence over what the viewer concludes about the evidence presented. So, you know, Dr. Minton has a video he put out called Lucy's No Lady. And I recommend
She's
it. It's
no
really
lady.
Interesting.
Yeah. That is a great title.
Unless an ape's a lady, you know, you want to call a chimp a lady?
No.
You don't want to do that.
No, it'd be an insult to ladies.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. And I really don't like referring to women as female only in the right context because it's a little bit dehumanizing. I mean, it's okay, but in the right context, you have bugs that are female. And so I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but generally, they are women and they're ladies.
Yeah.
And when necessary, in a biological sense or for whatever reason, female and male, sure, but not generally.
Yeah. So he has a really neat video clip within this video presentation of this guy named Owen Lovejoy. I think he was the head of the anthropology department at Kent State. Mm-hmm. Well, so they've known that Lucy's pelvis looks awfully ape-like, right? Well, they want it to look human because they want her to be the missing
this
link.
This is a historical part.
It's just amazing. And how does this evolutionist scientist solve the problem of the pelvis looking ape-like? Well, he breaks out the power saw.
Right.
And literally, in the video, and this is a
on
Discovery Channel or something.
This
is it from Nova? Thank
you.
Yeah, you can see PBS. You can see the dust. He turns it on, you hear the grind.
He's grinding the bones.
And then you see all this dust coming up in the air, clouding the room full of dust.
So Lucy could
walk
upright.
And so he's carving it. Yeah, he's carving away. He's changing the shape of the pelvis to make it more human-like. Mm. Based on the theory that a deer stepped on it
and
broke it, and then it refossilized in the shape that fits like a ape pelvis. How silly is that?
But they've looked at the inner ear of Lucy Australopithecus, and they found that it's not oriented correctly for an upright walker, meaning she'd be dizzy if she actually was trying to walk upright.
Yeah.
Just like if we were always running around on all fours, we're not made to do that.
That's right.
And Fred, it's not just the hip. It's the hip. It's the feet, it's the ankles, it's the inner ear, it's the neck. So many things have to change concurrently because if one of those things change, then the species is not well suited. And I thought natural selection would get rid of species that were not designed well.
Well, maybe the Owen Lovejoy on the ear. You know, that's not as big an object. He'll get out his Swiss Army knife and, you know, he'll postulate that, you know, some dragonfly chewed away at it and made it look more chimp-like.
Yes.
So anyways, isn't that creating evidence after the fact? You're making up your own evidence.
I think so. It makes me think of slugs.
Slugs, huh? That's an article in this magazine. Huh?
It is. Hey, Fred, when I think of slugs.
Is that a radio segue?
It might be. When I think of slugs, I don't
Why are you looking at me?
I do not think. When I think of slugs, I think of ugly creatures that I wouldn't want to eat even if I were dying in the wilderness, even if I knew they were very high protein.
You think of these greasy, small little blocks.
Yeah, they leave this slimy trail.
Yeah.
And I don't like the looks of a slug. It just looks gross.
Yeah, they do look gross. But in this magazine, they've got pictures of slugs that, wow, these things are actually quite beautiful. The
they
ones
are
in the
beautiful.
Ocean, they're amazing.
I asked my wife if she thought slugs were beautiful. And she said, of course not. I said, how about these? And Cheryl said, wow, they're just beautiful. They're sea slugs.
If you showed this picture to somebody and said, you know, what are these? They wouldn't think that they're slugs.
No, they're absolutely beautiful. You could have any one of these as a screensaver. and people would think it's very appealing. So what's with these things?
These things are amazing. For a defense mechanism, do they use their own? No.
They don't have much to defend themselves with.
Yeah. So what they do is, you know, I guess you are what you eat with these things.
Yeah.
They'll eat creatures that are poisonous.
Like, you know, an anemone?
Yeah. Creatures that have like poisonous stingers on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so do they die? No.
Their
body's designed so where the stingers move through their digestive system and somehow make it out to their skin and then become stingers for the slugs as a defense mechanism.
Oh,
kind of like Jim Carrey on The Mask. You know, he swallows all these bullets and then he spits them all back out.
Oh.
It's kind of like the same thing.
So if I were, instead of dying, if I were bitten by a rattlesnake, if I had the rattlesnake poison pass through me and go to my fingertips.
Yeah.
So then if a creature came to bite me, say a dog, and I put my finger in his mouth and he bit me, and then he would die.
The dog would die. Yeah.
That's a pretty neat trick.
So it takes
on. How do you evolve that ability to not be poisoned by it, but then to redeploy that defense mechanism?
Yeah.
In a secondary sense. That's really cool. Now, these things are called nudibranchs, and these are sea slugs. In other words, slugs that are in the ocean, nudibranchs. And these things are fascinating, Fred. So they have that one amazing defense mechanism where they redeploy the weapons of other species.
Wow.
But then also, I like the fact that some of them feed on the surface, so they have to float up on the surface, and they hold air in their gut, and they float, and that's one way they feed. Now, when Cheryl and I were in California, our friend Randy Hayes got married recently, beautiful wife Jennifer, wonderful wedding. And so we got to go to the beach and had a wonderful time snorkeling. And I noticed that there was some places like in Avalon, it was roped off for the general public. So you didn't go too far out to sea and get carried away by some current just for your protection. Of course, you could go wherever you want in the ocean, but and have you ever seen this? They have it in pools, too. It's a rope, and every so many feet, there's a floating device, so the rope stays on the surface. You've noticed those?
Course. Yeah,
very common. Well, so many species of seaweed do the same thing. They have, like, just the trunk or the stalk or the branch, and every 6 or 8 inches, there's a floaty. There's a little floating mechanism that keeps the whole seaweed up on the surface. And it's designed just like these safety ropes in a pool.
Wow. Now, do slugs do the same thing?
Well, I think they do differently. Slugs, just the similarity, what reminded me of these slugs, is that slugs will fill their gut up with air, and then they'll float so that they can feed.
And they can feed on the stuff on the surface.
Yeah,
wow.
Then when they're done, yeah, then they could sink again, like ballast in a submarine.
Yeah, okay.
It's just so amazing how God has designed the creatures that we don't even think about.
Who would think a slug could do so much? I've been trying to tell my wife that for such a long time.
Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it? The humble sea slug, yet endowed by God with magnificent variety of color and beauty. And that reminds me of what Jesus said in Matthew 6. In fact, Ken Ham's magazine is always so good at pointing out the biblical relevance to these scientific discoveries. But this article is by Melinda Christian, and she points out that in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus spoke of the flowers of the field, which were more splendidly arrayed than King Solomon himself. And what a perfect example of these sea slugs, that human designers cannot design something as beautiful as some of these.
You know, it mentions that sometimes they take on these really bright, vivid colors that we've talked about, and you'd think, wow, that would be pretty bad for survival because, hey, here I am, come and get me. God has designed a mechanism into other creatures to kind of say, hey, this is kind of a warning here.
Yeah.
Let's stay away from this thing.
That is a great point because evolutionists do struggle with that. There are creatures that are so brightly arrayed that they become obvious and noticeable to predators immediately. But then the predator stays away. And evolutionists have a hard time with that. Like, why wouldn't the predator go after it? You're making yourself more visible to the enemy. It would be like being out on a battlefield right on the front line and saying, I don't want any camouflage. In fact, yeah. Put a bell on my head and paint my hair bright red or something. It's counterintuitive, but God designed the entire ecosystem. So these creatures that really don't have many defense mechanisms, he could have just made them brightly colored, because in the predators, he gave them a hesitancy to go after creatures that stand out like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's like, okay, something's up with this guy. It's a trap.
Right, like there's no such thing as a free lunch.
And so obviously a lot of times it is a trap because of those stingers that the thing's eaten from some other animal
right.
That's going to nail them if they...
Right, and of course not all slugs use that mechanism.
They don't all do.
Of redeploying. Yeah. So yeah, it's all just so amazing, the worldwide ecosystem that God created. Hey, Fred, which is the bigger threat to the truth and to the gospel of Jesus Christ being promoted? Evolution, like Darwinism, or billions of years? Which is the bigger threat?
Well, I personally think the bigger threat is billions of years. Mm. I mean, I just think of my own personal beliefs. For 30 years, I believed in millions or billions of years, you know, that the universe was billions of years, the earth was billions of years old. And I went to Air Academy High School, and they really didn't spend a lot of time on evolution. I suspect the teacher just didn't buy into it. But they taught in all the classes, geology and science, you know, millions of years came up all the time. And I just took it for granted, and it's a proven fact. And I was pretty much a carnal Christian up to age 30, but I still believed the Bible. But I thought, well, God just used dinosaurs as pets for millions of years. You know, you do all these calisthenics in your brain.
Yeah, right.
But it's so powerful because so many people don't know that there's evidence against an old earth, against these millions and billions of years. And it really compromises Genesis. And who knows of the numbers of people who saw this and read Genesis and said, oh, this can't be true because it contradicts what science is teaching.
Billions of years.
So billions of years, a lot more people buy into that.
Right. Ken Ham points out that when you talk to people about God as our creator, there are certainly people who get upset if you say evolution isn't true. God made us this way. Mm-hmm. But way more people get upset. He used the word ballistic. He said many people go ballistic when you say that God created us in the world, the universe, only thousands of years ago, not millions.
Yeah,
they're
mocking.
Go nuts.
Yeah, it goes off the charts. Yes. They'll mock you for believing creation or not accepting evolution. Mm-hmm. But boy, they'll use the millions of years. They're like, oh, now the person's a complete idiot and they're really stupid. I mean, they really do go ballistic. I remember teaching the creation classes at my church, and one of the girls in the class ended up going to a public school. She had been going to a Christian school. And I asked her, how much evolution did you get taught? And she goes, well, you know, not much. And she was kind of promoting the public school. She was glad that she went there. Mm-hmm. And I go, wait a minute, you're saying
so she's saying evolution was downplayed.
Yeah, it was downplayed.
I've heard that, too.
And I go, well, what about millions of years? And, of course, that's
everywhere.
Not downplayed. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yep.
It's in the math book. It's everywhere.
So the greater threat, I think, is millions of years.
Millions of years.
Absolutely.
So I believe that Ken Ham is exactly right, because young Earth is a 100% certain cure for atheism.
Yes.
Young Earth. Now, there are a number of atheists who don't buy into strict materialist Darwinism. They think that aliens seeded life on Earth.
Yeah, and that seems to be a growing theory.
Yeah.
All right.
Panspermia.
Yeah.
They don't figure out how the aliens evolved. They never quite get to that.
Yeah.
But there are a number of atheists who don't get too upset when you point out the holes with evolution. But when you point out the falsehood and the claim that we know the earth is millions of years old, then they get upset.
They get upset and they really start to ridicule.
Right. So the age of the earth is 100% cure for atheism when you show people the truth that the earth is young. I really like that.
And it's important to bring that up in any discussion you're having with somebody on Origins. Mm-hmm. Talk about the age of the earth, because most people, evolution, I really think it is so dumb when you look at the evidence. It's people do have a hard time believing evolution. We see that from studies, right?
Yeah.
The evolutionists haven't made a lot of headway in getting the public to believe in evolution.
In fact, it seems to be going the other way. We recently mentioned a poll. I interviewed Jonathan Witt, one of the authors in the intelligent design movement, with William Dembski, and they referenced a poll by an institute, it's an evolution institute, the Lewis Finkelstein Institute. They surveyed a lot of doctors, U.S. medical doctors. And Fred, the media spun this the exact opposite way of the truth. Here is the truth. In question number 7, they asked over 1,000 medical doctors, what are your views on the origin and development of human beings? Did God create us exactly as we appear now? God initiated and guided an evolutionary process? Or we evolved with no supernatural intervention? Okay, the vast majority, 60%, said God was involved. 60%.
60%.
Now, the way this survey was presented and sold through the media is that the vast majority of doctors believe in evolution. Well, not the secular evolution taught in the schools. The majority, 60%, and that's the same percentage as that big study of U.S. public school, high school teachers, science teachers, who do not want to teach evolution in the classroom.
Yeah.
That was also 60%. Interesting.
Okay, right? That is interesting.
Yeah. And so they said, well, a majority of doctors believe in evolution. Well, they left out the little detail that they believe that God initiated and guided evolution, which means that they are intelligent design advocates.
Yeah, and they're not saying that. They're, again, pushing their agenda, and they
twist
the data, really
like
misrepresent it.
Yeah, like PhysOrg and countless evolutionists, including Aaron Ra that I'm debating, and they twist it. So you can ask a vague question and get an answer that the atheists are excited about.
Yep.
You can ask an explicit question, was God involved, and they don't like that, and they misrepresent that.
Well, it'd be interesting if there was a survey on how many believe in an old earth, because that's what we're talking about here is evolution seems to be, it's people recognize that it's a fairy tale. I think a lot of people do, but millions of years is more abstract in their mind, and they've been taught it for millions of years, and it just becomes so ingrained in their thought process. It was for me for, like I said, for 30 years. I was surprised that there was even an argument against an old earth.
Right.
I didn't know that there was anything out there that even suggested that until I got interested in the creation versus evolution debate.
Yeah.
So I think it's real important. If the earth is 6,000 years old or thereabouts, evolution, it's not possible anyways, but it totally removes it as any
kind of reasonable.
Yeah.
Even a
and
fantasy.
Evolutionists know that. That's why they're so defensive of millions of
and
years.
And that's why Disney puts millions of years in most of their movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they bought into a godless worldview.
Yep.
And Sesame Street also, of course. Hey, Fred, we're out of time, but I want to urge people to check out the Real Science Friday store. Just click on the science department. There are so many fun DVDs, books, debates. There's so much to not only entertain you. In fact, we have the Real Science Friday collection of, what do we have, 5 years worth of our Real Science Friday shows all in one collection on CDs,
yeah,
on five
that's
CDs.
Right. You've got a really good range of material. I think it's a great resource. RealScienceFriday.com.
I think so. So click on the store, and that helps us stay on the air, because each show, people would be shocked if they find out how much it costs.
I was shocked.
Just
when
for
you told
the airtime. Yeah. And then, of course, for the staff and for all the web design and for everything.
Yep.
The insurance.
Yeah.
So, Fred, hey, there's an article
Obamacare?
In here, the chicken or the egg, which came first?
Oh.
I think when Dawkins and Charles Darwin and Dobzhansky, when they see God, they're going to be ready to argue, and God's going to say, all right, one question. Which came first, the chicken
or the egg?
And they're going to say, I didn't know that.
The chicken.